Neil Young and Crazy Horse. I wanna live with the cinnamon. Love Earth Tour. Down by the July 29th, Utah First Credit Union Amphitheater. A rare opportunity to see Neil Young and Crazy Horse live. Always in high fidelity. On sale now at Ticketmaster. More information at neilyoungarchives.com.
The following is a presentation of KSL Sports. First and 12. A total roundup of this weekend's BYU football and the new look Big 12 Conference. First and 12 is sponsored by Macy's Grocery Store. Your hosts are Mitch Harper and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio and the KSL Sports Zone.
Can you believe how far into the season we are now? Another edition of First and 12, your Big 12 absolute breakdown every week right here. Mitch Harper, Alex Keery. Mitch, of course, is in West Virginia still. Trapped in West Virginia. There's probably something, some symbolism in there, probably how BYU fans feel right now after their loss last night, 37-7, to the West Virginia Mountaineers.
I'm in a glass case of moonshine right now.
I just imagine you in your hotel room today, some guy with just a handful of teeth peeking up over your window going, "Yeah, thanks for coming to West Virginia." And just
take me home,
hey,
country road.
I'm your Uber driver. And you're like, no. Mitch, you've got tons to get into, of course, and probably one of our funnest segments of the week. And one, obviously, we have to kind of try to figure out as soon as everything goes final on Saturday nights and get into our Sunday show here is to figure out what the power rankings are in the Big 12. So let's jump in right there.
The Big 12 Power Rankings Big Board. A weekly rank of all 12 programs, from the elite to the bottom dwellers.
We'll start with those bottom dwellers in these power rankings this week. Number 14, Cincinnati. They remain winless. Tough times for Scott Satterfield.
And, you know, it's kind of crazy, too, because, you know, we're watching this thing go down, and you're going, well, Cincinnati's supposed to be a little bit okay, right? Everybody else seems to be stealing wins here and there. And they just cannot do it. And, I don't know what to think about Cincinnati. And I don't know if you just look at it and go, nope, Coach Satterfield's just, is just a strikeout on a coaching hire. Or if they're just, like, going through a little bit what BYU is, which is, we're in a big conference now, and we weren't absolutely totally up to snuff on the talent side of things or coaching side of things, and here we are. But 13, Baylor. Hey, good for Baylor. They got a little dub. Or they got a little. They don't look as bad, I guess. Even though they don't. Because what's their record right now, Mitch? I want to say that they're 3-6.
3-6. 4 in Big 12.
And just look. If you had them down for being as bad as they are, we would have never thought it. But like, I don't know. You think about the four worst teams right now in the Big 12, and you go, I don't know. These are some bad football teams. Four and five right now playing kind of really bad football. And so, yeah, Baylor at 13, kind of a no-brainer right there where they're supposed to be at. But they dropped a couple spots, obviously, with the loss this week.
It's shocking how lack of a presence they have in the trenches, because that's been their bread and butter the past few years. It's non-existent in Waco this year. Number 12, UCF. You know, they got their first Big 12 win. It was over one of the bottom dwellers, and that's Cincinnati, but still, yeah, a win's a win, and that was a big win for Cincinnati or UCF as they get one step closer to getting maybe into bowl eligibility at 4-5.
Yeah, you know, what was weird about that was, John Rhys Plumlee's just been not that great, right? And after the Oklahoma, it's like he showed up for that Oklahoma game, and then after that it's just kind of been, I'm not that into it. But UCF. Getting their first win in conference, but you know, still doesn't feel like it's a really good football team. Number 11, the BYU Cougars, below the Houston Cougars, by the way, I'll add. And I don't think that that's wrong right now. There's a feeling right now that this team is not just low in the rankings, but also kind of maybe even plummeting further past that. And so, the feeling of BYU and Cougar Nation, Mitch, and I can't wait for you guys on Cougar Nation on, you guys are doing it later this week, right? And is that kind of – maybe some people will cool off and not be as mad this next week. So
we'll actually have it Monday at noon. So
okay,
it will
good.
Be
So it'll be fresh on people's minds. People will be in the middle of the day taking their lunch break and then yelling at you guys, you and Matt, on Cougar Nation. It's going to be good.
We will be there for them to vent their frustrations because there's a lot of frustration in Cougar Nation. And the other Cougar Nation is happy right now. That's number 10, Houston, as they take down Baylor, a longtime rival back in the day. First time they faced Houston in nearly 30 years. And I know Holgorsen had this one circled because he was ticked at Baylor for backing out of a game during the COVID year. They wanted this one bad. There were some personal grudges. And they get it done in overtime. And Donovan Smith, man, he's had a knack. Like, you can say what you will about Houston, but in late-game situations with game on the line, Donovan Smith's delivering some epic performances.
Yeah.
Hail Mary, and then a two-point conversion to get it done against Baylor.
Number nine, the team I just had a massive head-scratcher on, maybe the weirdest team in all of the conference, is TCU, Sonny Dykes' team, losing to Texas Tech and on a wild Thursday night. I'm sure they're not used to playing on Thursday nights, but, boy, this TCU team is just absolutely all over the place this year, mostly all over the place in the losing category.
Do you think they become the next team or first team since Texas in 2009 to have a losing record the year after they go to the national title game? Do you think it's going to happen?
I mean, they're on their way. What are they, 4-5 now overall? Yeah. So, yeah, I think that that's definitely on the table. And at some point you kind of go, as a team, you look around and go, well, we're 4-5. We're not great. We can play spoiler against some teams right now. But, yeah, they don't have a lot to try to figure out. You know, They just keep falling flat every week. And if it was the last time – no, it wasn't the last time they won was against BYU, was it? No. I'm getting that mixed up. I mean, it can't be – well, maybe it was, actually. Look at it, they've ripped off three straight losses after beating BYU, like just pounding BYU. Number eight on the list is Texas Tech, the team who handed them that loss. And, again, a head-scratcher, too, because you go, BYU beat those guys and they lose to those guys. Everybody does that, but that's the way it is in conference play. If you don't show up every week – you're going to be inconsistent, and you're going to look funny because all the other teams are also you can be caught flat-footed, and you have a chance every week to overcome. But, man, good for Joey McGuire because he's a little bit on the hot seat there, at least according to some of our friends who are down there in Lubbock.
Yeah, Texas Tech is a much different football team with Baron Morton at quarterback. BYU would have probably had a far different look with Texas Tech had they faced him, and that was a big win for Texas Tech. And then they follow it up with a big recruiting win. They get one of the top quarterbacks in the 2024 recruiting cycle. So good things rolling this week for Texas Tech. Number seven, Iowa State. Suffered a tough setback against Kansas at home, but still, Iowa State is a good football team. They're going to go to a bowl game. Mm-hmm. Matt Campbell's done a really good job with this group to only lose by 7 points to Kansas. They had their opportunities. They fought back to get back in the game. Just a resilient group, and they continue to show that despite all the personnel losses that they've had this season.
Yeah, and don't be fooled by them losing that game. They're going to be favorites in this one against BYU coming to Provo almost assuredly.
No doubt.
Number six, West Virginia. The Mountaineers, of course, pounded BYU last night, and then you get yourself higher up in the rankings. Neil Brown, good for him. It was interesting this week. We talked to one of the guys from West Virginia, one of the beat writers, and we were like, hey, Neil Brown, he's firing it back up. You guys love this guy now. He goes, well, hold your horses. We don't really like him. He's winning, but we don't like him.
I'm glad you bring that up because I really thought that people were going to kind of circle the wagons around this team because – With West Virginia, I mean, the pulse around Morgantown, they only had 50,000 people show up to BYU, West Virginia on an evening game in Morgantown. And a lot of the beat writers are saying, well, it's because they don't like Neil Brown. It's like, oh, I mean, the guy's got the bowl eligibility already, 6 wins, and you got still everything in front of you. Like, what do you not like? That
right.
Team's looking pretty good right now.
And eclipsed last year's win total already with 3 more games left. So, whatever. People are weird at some schools. They just decide they don't like a guy, and then they go, let's just wait for the time to be over for him. I don't think he fits in here. And you're like, dude, you're going to throw somebody away who's a decent coach, and then you're going to end up getting whoever. All right, next up, Kansas State. Now, I was on the Kansas State train. I really thought they were going to beat Texas this week. I didn't think Malik Moore had enough. I thought they were rolling with all of the wins they'd had, just absolutely blasting teams over the last couple of weeks. But come up short in overtime. Weird play call, by the way, at the end. I don't know what they were doing. Just kick the dang field goal to put the onus on Texas to try to win that thing. But anyway, they lose 33-30 in overtime at Texas, and there you go. There's your number five team on the power ranking.
We have a change in the top two. They fall down from 2 last week now to 4. That's the Oklahoma Sooners. I think it's fitting, though, after 2 consecutive losses.
Yeah, I think it fits. And you know, you also have another team who is 7-2 and is headed the other direction. Number three on the list this week is Kansas. Good for them, man. Good for Lance Leipold, who, you know, at the beginning of the year we didn't like because he just kept talking about how mature BYU was. But, you know, I just think he's done a great job. And Kansas is having one of their better years. And so good for them. And it's not just like having a one-off better year either, I don't think, Mitch. I think that they're building something there in Lawrence.
They're going to be one of the top programs in the new Big 12. There's no doubt in my mind. With as long as Leipold's there, they will be near the top. Number two, a team that's always been near the top because of head coach Mike Gundy, that's Oklahoma State. They surge to number two after that big Bedlam win, and I think they deserve it. They got one of the best resumes in the conference right now. They're playing some of their best football. They check in at number two.
I don't know how many weeks it was ago, Mitch, but they were number 14 at one point. Maybe it was Maybe it was after that University of Southern Alabama loss that they took at home by three touchdowns, and you're going, I don't even know who that team was that they played, the Jaguars. But, yeah, Mike Gundy doing what Mike Gundy does, and they've had the biggest bounce back this year. Kudos to them. Number two in our power rankings. And then, of course, number one, your Texas Longhorns. Getting it done. I mean, you heard Coach Sarkisian, or we'll be able to hear Coach Sarkisian in our next segment, I think, talking about the resiliency of this team. And you know what? Like, that's the kind of grounded out win that you need in seasons where you're going to have a special year. You have to win some of those close ones and eke some of them by as well. And that's what they're doing. So there are your power rankings. You can always go back, download the podcast, get more of those, and just kind of see where teams are every week right here on First and 12. Let's take another break. We'll come back. We do have our sound roundup next. Hear from Coach Sark, hear from Mike Gundy, and much more. I think we're going to even hear from Jake Retzlaff. So join us. More to go around the corner. It's First and 12.
Big 12 Sound Roundup.
Check 1-2.
The best bites, cheap shots, and excuses from Saturday's post-game news conferences.
DJ Khaled.
First and 12.
We the best.
All I do is win.
No matter what, I got money on my mind. I can never get enough.
Win. I don't know, but I know we rushed enough to win.
Producer Eric delivering again. You just played yourself, Oklahoma, because Mike Gundy's coming. Oh, my goodness. That was fantastic. Producer Eric always making this thing younger, hipper. It's the new Big 12, baby. It's First and 12 every single week, and it's the Sound Roundup. Let's just dive right into it. The best sound bites from the week. Let's hear more from Mike Gundy.
Well, that was a really good college game. A lot of excitement. It's kind of the way you want it. Back and forth, and a lot of big plays for both teams. Mistakes for both teams. Things that we wish we would could have back. I'm sure there's things they wish they could have back. But two good teams competing against each other, like a heavyweight prize fight, trading blows. But I mentioned in the locker room how proud I was of our coaches, their plans that they had going into the game, and then the adjustments they made through the game. And our players' willingness to ride the wave, ups and downs, and just continue to go out and compete, play the next play. most of the game, I watch faces and monitor body language and things. So if I feel like somebody's going south, I've got to go over and pick them up. Or if they're too enthusiastic and a little bit out of control, I've got to go over and calm them down. And one thing was interesting today in this game, I didn't really have to do much of either. The excitement that was generated at times by our team was timely, and we didn't have anybody that really got down on themselves. So they're starting to learn and get a feel for life lessons that will help them for the rest of their life to compete, stay the course, be able to take blows, and then hit back. As far as the game, our ability to rush the football, again,
I know we rushed enough to win.
Coach Mike Gundy right there, that's where the progeny, of course, of the win. And they did. I love how he takes the high road and acts like, oh, it's just another game. We played hard. Two big teams that are really important. It's like, dude, you with your eyes are flipping off Brent Venables and Oklahoma across the field. Like, definitely. Steve Sarkisian, here's your next piece of sound from the Sound Roundup. getting a win. Sounding way more calm, by the way, than the guy you see on the sideline F-bombing his own players. But, yeah, Steve Sarkisian and his thoughts on that win over Kansas State in overtime.
Sometimes I feel like I'm a broken record when I just talk about versatility, resiliency, perseverance. Those are all qualities that championship teams have, and because they find a way to win different ways, and they find a way to win games at critical moments, and they can make plays at critical moments. And so for our guys today, just felt like another example of that. They just, you know, as good as we were playing early, our own miscues and some forced by them allowed Kansas State to get back into the game. And I think it tested our resiliency, it tested our culture to stick together, because in the end, you know, when you block a punt, they score off of that. When you throw a pick in your own end, they score off of that. When you fumble in your own end, they score off of that. Those are moments when some teams could break, when the game gets tied, can't get the stop. And so through it all, could we play better? You know, could we found a way to play better at some key moments? Sure. But we played well enough at the most critical moment, when the ball's on your own, you know, 4 or 5 yard line there for 4 straight snaps, and our defense was able to get the stop. So it was a great start to the game. I love the efficiency of which we were playing in all three phases. Unfortunately, we let them back into the game, and then we had to fight like crazy to find a way to win. But to sit here 8-1 sure feels a heck of a lot better than sitting here 7-2.
Steve Sarkisian, before Saturday, was the last starting quarterback to lead BYU as from the JUCO ranks, the new JUCO quarterback to lead BYU, Jake Retzlaff. And he was in the postgame presser after BYU lost to West Virginia 37-7. This was Jake's commentary on his first career start.
It was a lot of fun early on in the game. Like, obviously the score doesn't reflect how we think we played, but it was fun being out there for the first time. There's no doubt about that.
Jake, how would you assess how you played?
It's hard to say that sitting here right now. How we played was 37-7 at the end of the day. So, you know, I'll have to go back and watch the tape and really figure out, like, you know, what we got to do and how we got to be better and how I got to be better. You know, I don't know how I play. I don't know the numbers or anything, but, you know, we just got to play better as a unit and put some points on the board. We didn't do that this week.
You feel like you showed enough to be the starting quarterback the rest of the season?
I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. That's not my decision. You know, like I said, I'll just go back to the tape and, you know, dissect what I did and learn from that. I think that's A-Rod's decision at the end of the day. And so, you know, I just know that I'm going to go out there and play my hardest and play my heart out every week. And whatever that comes to, you know, I'll live with that.
Did you feel like you were running a lot tonight in terms of just getting away from pass rush?
No, I felt like I was running design runs a lot tonight, to be honest with you. I think that that was in the game plan this week. And you know, we knew that we could steal some. And when they dropped 8, it's hard to throw when they drop 8. And so we're just going to run it with the quarterback. And I think we had some good designs and we made some good yards.
What did you see on the 4th-and-2 where you midfield, first possession, I think it was, you guys went for it, got stuffed?
Yeah, you know, I just saw a lack of execution across the board. You know, I made my read hand Aiden the ball. You know, I think Aiden's a great runner. I think he could get 2 yards. I don't know exactly what happened on the front end. You know, I focused on my read on the backside. My read was to give it to Aiden and let him go to work. It was unfortunate we came up short because it was a really promising drive. But like I said, you know, we got to execute better.
Jake, what's up? Like, I'm just curious your mentality. When you break, contain, when do you look to pass versus when do you look to run? Because sometimes, you know, it breaks down and there's somebody open. I think you almost had a touchdown to Chase on one of those plays. And then another, you know, others you take off. So I'm just curious which – when do you do
it? Yeah, you know, I consider myself a passer, and I run to pass for the most part, but I'm also not going to leave yards right in front of me, so I'm going to go get them most of the time. But, when I break the pocket, my eyes are still up a lot of the time, and I'm just trying to steal something from the defense. You know, I think we did that a couple times, and then, you know, when you got to turn and put your head down and run, you got to turn and put your head down and run, take the yards in front of you if they lock it up on the back end. It's not often they're able to lock up both the front end on the scramble and the back end, but they were able to do that some part. But, you know, I think we ran the ball with quarterback pretty effectively tonight. You know, could have been better like anything, but yeah, I feel like I just, you know, I'd run a throw and make opportunities for guys downfield. But when I could take it, I take it.
The team was notified this week that you were going to be QB1. Yeah. How supportive are your offensive teammates to kind of rally around you and, you know, build you up in this moment?
Super supportive. The guys had my back the whole way. You know, Isaac said earlier in the week that, it didn't look like it was going to be my first career start. I think that's mainly because of the guys who got behind me in the offense during the week. We just, you know, we practiced business as usual, you know, and just attacked the week, you know, to go play better than we did today. But yeah, I think I had full support from every unit on the field, and I think we were excited to go out there and play.
Do you feel like you proved to yourself and your teammates that you can play at this level?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there was a doubt going into the game. I don't think, you know, A-Rod would put somebody on the field who couldn't. But, you know, I think that it wasn't a matter of proving if I could play at the level. It was just a matter of going out and executing offense. And, you know, like I said, we didn't do that well tonight.
Do you have family here?
Yeah, I did. I had a couple extended family. My mom came, too.
What was that like, having them here? And, you know, I know the outcome wasn't what you wanted, but...
It was incredible. I love playing in front of my family, and I feel like, you know, the Rock is your family a lot of times too at home. But playing in front of my family, it just means something special to me because I just know how proud they are of me and how much they want to see me succeed. So it's just another motivating factor to go out there and play well.
What's going to keep this team together through this adversity on a two-game skid now?
I'll tell you what, I think this team has got a lot of great unity to it. I think that these guys really love each other. I think that we have something special here. I think that, you know, two losses in a row hurts. There's no doubt about that. But I think we're pretty good at having the mindset that, you know, we're definitely going to look at this tape hard and fix the mistakes that we made. But at the end of the day, you know, we're not going to be able to do anything about tonight. We can't go back to Saturday at 7 p.m., you know what I mean? So we gotta move on and... not forget it, learn from it. A saying that an old friend of mine once says, the L's in the loss column are not for losses, they're for lessons. So we just got to go back and learn from it and play better next week.
How much of the playbook was kind of is still operating with you compared to Keaton from what you could tell and what you've kind of learned in this offense?
Wow. Thanks, Slade. Gosh. I'll get out of your way, all right? Jeez, man.
Interview's over. Shut it down.
Yeah, I don't think there's a different playbook we play with. I think that A-Rod is a really good play caller, and he's good at what he's been good at is calling plays to his quarterback. So I know the whole playbook's available, but I also know there's a part of the playbook that A-Rod loves me in. And so I think that he's going to try to do that more.
Tough spot for him to be in. And, you know, the idea of, like, hey, did you have fun out there? Like, it's all, it's 37-7. But, yeah, I mean, I like getting the opportunity to start, but nobody wants
good
to lose.
Good on the mic, though.
Yeah, he is actually – he really is good. And we kind of knew that at the beginning of the year, but he seemed to handle himself before, you know, before the game, after the game, all of it. And so – kudos to him. I'm interested to see. I kind of hope he gets another shot, and hopefully he has a little bit more time this week to get ready for it. I'd like to see the second start for Jake Retzlaff just to see. And also, if Keaton Slovis is hurt, let's, you know, give it a minute for BYU fans. Like, hey, getting another guy in there, let's see what goes on. All right, we'll take the break here. We'll come back when we return. We have our Four Corners whip around. And, boy, it's a wild one this weekend for the teams that are joining the Big 12 next year from the Pac-12. Stay with us. It's 1st and 12, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone, and KSL News Radio. Alex Keery, Mitch Harper, stay with us.
The following is a presentation of KSL Sports. 1st and 12. A total roundup of this weekend's BYU football and the new look Big 12 Conference. 1st and 12 is sponsored by Macy's Grocery Store. Your hosts are Mitch Harper and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio and the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's another edition of 1st and 12 right here on KSL News Radio and the KSL Sports Zone and on podcasts. You can download 1st and 12. Mitch Harper and I, our producer Eric, we have a fantastically fun time. Way too fun. On a show like this, especially after a BYU 30-point loss. But you know what? Maybe that's how we get through it. And maybe, hopefully, that's the same way that you can as well. Thanks for listening to the program here. Can I bring something up from a non-Big 12 game here, Mitch? the Washington Huskies beat USC in one of the more exciting, one of the more entertaining games, I should say, of the entire college football season this year. And Caleb Williams, like, cries after every game. What happens when this guy goes to the NFL and you cry after every game? Is that going to work out? I'm not trying to pick on the guy. I'm saying this is his mode. He won't shake hands with the opponents. And then in tonight's thing, he ran over to his mom and cried in her arms in the stands. And I thought, I don't know if this is going to work out if you're the top two pick. I don't know. I'm not trying to be mean here, but
maybe he just needs to take Acho's advice that he said a couple weeks ago. Hey, there's nothing to play for anymore. You're not going to the playoff. You're not going to win Heisman.
Shut her down.
Check out. Just shut it down. You know what? Because I got to say, I'm with you. Caleb Williams has become kind of unlikable, and I know Big 12 fans, especially the Oklahoma fans out there, probably enjoy hearing that because
they're laughing.
Oklahoma just despises that USC team, so I'm sure they're thrilled to see, you know, USC have these struggles. But yeah, that was a good football game, and you know, Washington, they got back on track, the high powered offense that they are. They're one of the best teams in the nation, and Oregon might be the best team in the nation, honestly. As the Ducks get ready to go to the Big Ten next year, they're looking outstanding. But, you know, the four corner schools, they had some good showings as well this weekend.
Yeah, let's jump in, of course. It's our four corners whip around. Since we were talking about other teams outside of the Big 12, let's talk about the ones that are right now outside the Big 12 coming in. It's our four corners whip around.
The four corners whip around. Whip around. We check on future Big 12 opponents and rivals from the four corners.
Let's start up on the hill. Number 18, Utah. They made a statement. If you don't think they can score with the pig farmer, well, think again. 55-3. They lay the hammer down on Arizona State.
I think Bryson Barnes had 150 yards passing, but four touchdowns through the air. So quite the day. And they were handing the ball off to everybody at the end, and everybody was scoring. Charlie Vincent, former East High guy, and, you know, a preferred walk-on coming to the school. He gets a long touchdown. How about former BYU quarterback? Sorry, I can't say it without laughing a little bit, because Jacob Conover is the fourth-string guy at Arizona State. Had to play in this game. Went 5-for-21 with an interception. 40 yards. Did you see that stat line? 40 yards passing, and the Sun Devils ended with 83 yards total. It's the lowest output of yardage by a team in the Pac-12, tied for the worst ever. And the biggest disparity on yardage in a game also since, I think, the year 1999. So all sorts of records yesterday for Utah. And Coach Witt, you know, he said after the game that they were just pumped to get back in that thing and, you know, just kind of flush last week. And that certainly helps. 55-3 on that one. Colorado and
Arizona State. Arizona State, though, they just got to hope and pray this offseason that Jaden Rashada stays with them and doesn't go to the portal.
Yes.
Because he is the ticket to any sort of success in year one of the Big 12, because
100%.
It's bad. It is bad for ASU. I mean, they were competitive in recent weeks, but there's just a lack of talent. That's going to be a big, big rebuild for Kenny Dillingham.
Speaking of rebuild, one that's in the middle of it, and maybe you get another rebuild next year. Colorado has lost three straight after losing to Oregon State yesterday, 26-19. Prime after the game, I watched his face, and the guy had like a 1,000-yard stare. They changed play callers this week. Colorado trying to figure all sorts of things out, but they're now 4-5 on the season after being the most important college football story. Am I overstating this, Mitch? Like, ever at the beginning of the year? You've never seen a team that was not in a premier market and a blue blood program getting as much attention as Colorado did at the beginning of the year, and how the mighty have fallen. So there you go. They fall to 4-5 on the season.
How about this team, though? They are rising. That's Arizona. Wow.
Yeah, man.
Jed Fish and the Wildcats, they get a big win, 27-10 over nationally ranked UCLA. Arizona's 6-3. This Wildcat team, they're still in the hunt, too, for the Pac-12 title. And they've got everything in front of them. I mean, this team is playing outstanding right now. They are definitely trending up. The meter is scorching hot on Jed Fish as they get ready for the Big 12 next year.
You know what's wild, too, is you look at Arizona and you go, oh, they're playing with their backup quarterback. They have found a dadgum superstar in Noah Fifita. I mean, that guy is good. And you notice that Delora is actually back. Like, he could probably play. He attempted one pass tonight or last night. But he is – like, Fifita is going to be good for a while. So, good for him. So, I mean, this is a guy who He's a freshman, dude, and Jed Fish is got a team, man, and they're gonna go the Big 12 next year. It's gonna be like the media poll at the beginning of the year is gonna be them in the top 4 or 5, man.
Jed Fish has got to be telling that Arizona collective at all costs keep Noah Fifita happy, because don't you? I mean, that's the name of the game, because we see that now and go, oh, in years past it would have been, man, they got 4 years of this guy.
Yeah,
you just got to make sure that he's happy. Now it helps that, you know, Noah Fifita's high school teammate McMillan, he's throwing the rock to him, and they got a great relationship. McMillan had 81 yards. So Arizona, I love what they're doing. I mean, they're beating tough physical football teams. I mean, UCLA is one of the best defenses in college football. They put up 27 on them and rolled.
They had a better defense going into this weekend than Utah does. They're the number one defense in the Pac-12. And I'll tell you, Arizona, by the way, this is what it does when you put together recruiting classes too, because despite the fact that they don't have the money that these other programs in the Pac-12 do, a massive recruiter is Jed Fish, so good for them. The 2024 through 2027 schedules have been released. These teams, it's nice to see their logos next to everybody else going into the Big 12 next year. Mitch, it's awesome to see.
It was, and, you know, Arizona, Arizona State, that's a protected rivalry. BYU and Utah, protected rivalry. That's good to see, and I know that, you know, some of these four-corner fan bases, Utah and Arizona State in particular, they're kind of like, don't really want to go to these road trips, but I think that once they get into the Big 12, they'll realize there's some good football being played in this league, and they're going to definitely enjoy it. We got to take a break, though. Our final time out of the show. On the other side, we'll get to what's next in the Big 12 as Week 11 slate is loaded once again. We'll preview what's ahead in the Big 12 here on First and 12. Mitch Harper, Alex Keery, right here on KSL News Radio and the KSL Sports Zone.
Can't get enough BYU football? Listen to Cougar Nation. Mitch Harper takes your calls Monday nights from 6 to 7 on KSL News Radio. Podcast at kslnewsradio.com.
This week, it's going to be Monday at noon. So just a quick programming note there. That's because BYU basketball is actually starting.
That's right.
Tonight. Big 12 basketball is back, baby. So that's going to be a lot of fun this week. But obviously here on this show, we're focusing on Big 12 football. And if you've missed any part of the program, I highly recommend you go subscribe to the podcast on the KSL Sports app or all major podcasting platforms. So, Alex, week 11 slate is going to be a good one once again. 7 games. The chase to get to Arlington is heating up heading down the stretch.
Yeah, and, you know, when you start to see some of these matchups, these next few weeks, because there's a heavyweight bout every week now, right, where you kind of see these games and you go, ooh, that could be a tough one. And there's also going to be some upsets that are looming. You know, Oklahoma State's having this crazy tear, but watch him lose a game, you know, in the last week. You know, that's the way that this kind of works. So right off the bat, when you think about the big one, of course, this week for BYU fans, if you're wondering, Iowa State comes to BYU. This has got to be an advantage of some sort. The Cyclones coming to Provo, having to play an 8:15 game. The late game, we haven't seen a lot of those this year, Mitch, but this is another edition of a late night game on ESPN. Hopefully they show out better than when they were on the Big Fox this week, thanks to the World Series getting over early. The entire nation got to see BYU get their butts handed to them, but Iowa State and BYU, hopefully that's a rebound for the Cougs, but they get to be at home, which was a big point that Kalani brought up this week.
And I'm glad you bring that up, because BYU, to their credit, they're 2-0 in Big 12 games at home. And I know it was against Cincinnati and a shorthanded Texas Tech, but still, they've shown that it is a night and day difference at home for BYU. And maybe the Vampires only come out at home in Provo. I don't know if that's fair, where all the action goes for the Vampires. But BYU is good in those home game spots late at night. But they gotta have a huge overhaul. There's got to be a calling out with coaches, players, the intensity, I mean, from top to bottom in that program, if they want to get a win, because Iowa State has one of the best defenses in this league. You know that every single week that group brings it. So BYU, if they want to have any shot, they've got to take care of the football, and their offense has got to muster up something, some sort of explosive plays, because it was lacking in Morgantown.
Yeah, starting off the very first part of your day, though, next Saturday is going to be, a Veterans Day matchup, by the way, on the 11th. So happy Veterans Day, everybody out there. Texas Tech and Kansas kick things off with a 10 a.m. FS1. No, I guess that'd be that's a 10 a.m. FS1 kickoff. Baylor and Kansas State. I mean, so right now you look at those two games, you go, Kansas is going to roll, Kansas State's going to roll, and watch, one of those is going to be an upset, Mitch.
Oh, you know what's going to happen. I mean, that's just the Big 12, I swear. Once we feel like we know this league, we're like, okay, we've kind of figured out these are the power teams. Something wild's going to happen. And I love that about following this conference. And I just love how there's these teams seem to have this knack when you feel like, okay, they're going to completely bottom out and they're reeling. They somehow find a way to get a big win other than Cincinnati. Everyone just finds these weeks that they got it, you know, mustered it, or they can pull it off and pull off some wins. So that's going to be the challenge for these teams. And it's just going to be good matchups, I think, for sure next week.
Also on your Saturday, Oklahoma State, how can they follow up their Bedlam performance? UCF, they go on the road to UCF. And that's going to be, I mean, look, being at home and playing that Bedlam series is so emotional. Then you go down to Orlando, which is like, I can't imagine Oklahoma State playing in Orlando like ever, but here we are. And that's part of the conference now. That's going to be a 1:30 kick here. It's going to be on the big ESPN. Watch out for Texas and whether or not there's going to be a hangover there against that Kansas State team this week, because they go to Fort Worth, and TCU is this kind of, you know, laying in the weeds waiting to come up and bite you, because you know, they have the talent there. And Sonny Dykes, I believe in that guy. But does Texas trip up against TCU? That's going to be on ABC. That's going to be your 5:30 kickoff for next week as well.
Texas beat writers last week, they thought coming into the year that the only team that was a threat to Texas was TCU. And, wow, they were wrong on that. But you're right, though. TCU has personnel. They got talent.
Yes.
You know, Sonny Dykes called out their veterans, though, after that Texas Tech loss last Thursday, particularly the secondary, guys like Bud Clark, who you thought, okay, carryovers from the national championship team, they were even part of the Gary Patterson era, and they were going to be these veteran leaders. They just haven't. There were so many missed tackles against Texas Tech. Can they find a way to bring it together for Texas? Because if they get that one, that almost takes away a lot of the bad vibes they've had the past few weeks if they can take down Texas in one final game. Because you know Texas is never going to schedule TCU again. It's kind of like Houston. Not to that degree, but still one step above. They're never scheduling the Horned Frogs again. So one final shot to send Texas to the SEC with a big L.
West Virginia, RIP to the Mountaineers next week when they go to Norman, because Oklahoma is going, all right, we have to murder everybody on the way through this schedule the rest of the way to impress, because they're going to fall out of that top 10. And the Mountaineers, they might be rolling right now, but they're going to go to Norman. And we'll see what happens when Oklahoma meets the Mountaineers next week.
Am I crazy, Alex, to think West Virginia can win that game? Because I think they can.
You know what that is?
They've got four different options on the that can run the football at a high level, and I think it carries over against Oklahoma. I do. I think West Virginia is going to give them a game.
That's you driving past all of those mountain stills that are out there in the hills. I know. You know what's funny is that they're like, I think John Denver was a West Virginia graduate, wasn't he? Like, their backs of their helmets say Country Roads on them. I'm all, don't try to brand yourselves over just a really popular country song. Quit it. All right, quit it. RIP John Denver. But I don't think they will. I think they're going to go to Norman next week. And, you know, they were riding high this week, but I think it was something different. And I think that Oklahoma is going to go, wake up, guys. We have better personnel than these dudes. And they're having a nice season, but this is where the buck stops right here. They can get their seventh win next week. It's not going to be against Oklahoma.
I do give West Virginia, though, is – when you bring up country music, they got one of the best country music DJs that I've ever heard in a stadium. He was spinning the country hits. He was doing remixes like our guy Eric. He was doing an outstanding job. It was great stuff. Like, Eric would blow him out of the water, but this guy was holding it down. It was a pretty good playlist. And for the beat writers that haven't listened to a song after the year 2004, their heads was spinning in that thing. There was a lot of TikTok country remixes, but it was some good stuff inside Milan Pusker Stadium.
I love the idea that, like, you go, yeah, what a great country music DJ he was. I'm all, isn't that just a guy at the square dance place? Like, isn't that just a line dancing guy? It's like, pick up the gal to your left,
man.
And let's all go.
It was a vibe.
Pick up your sister. Now let's dance. Like, there's all sorts of weird stuff going on. The country music DJ. Hey, you're the one who was there. So before BYU, the BYU and Iowa State are the final game of the weekend, like we said. But another one between two really bad teams right now in the Big 12, Cincinnati at Houston. Have fun with that one, buddy. That's not going to be our Big 12 game of the week next
week. Tickets as low as $3 for that one. There's plenty of tickets to buy. This has been a good show, Alex. Great stuff again this week.
Yeah, I had fun, man. All right, Mitch, safe travels back to Utah. You can catch Mitch and Matt Biamonte, of course, on a midday edition of Cougar Nation on KSL News Radio tomorrow. JJ and Alex, myself and Jeremiah Jensen, every day also on the KSL Sports Zone. So for Mitch, our amazing producer, Eric, we bid adieu on another week of First and 12 right here on KSL News Radio and the KSL Sports Zone. See you next week, everybody.